Our vehicles are changing. We've got lots of kinds on the roads these days, from rumbling, throaty diesels to nearly silent electric cars. One thing is consistent along all those makes. We want them to sound and therefore work correctly. When they don't, we go looking for a repair shop. Zach Edwards is the owner of such a shop, Ashland Automotive, and he's our partner in a monthly segment we call the Squeaky Wheel. In this context, you are the squeaky wheel. Give us a call or email to talk about automotive issues you've had or are currently having. It's almost like stump the mechanic with Zach, but it gets a little more interesting than that with lots of stories to tell as well. Join us at 800-838-3760 by phone or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Zach, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks again for having me.
Sure. Some pent-up demand here. We had some questions right at the end of our June session. We got preempted by the 4th of July. So, Mary and Arcata, when we had that discussion in June about gasoline quality changes, was asking about diesel. Says that was told that the brand of diesel doesn't matter like the brand of gasoline. Wants to know if that is true.
Yeah, as far as I know, it is, and I'm not a diesel technician by trade, but, you know, diesel is a less refined form of fuel, and so, you know, diesel engines are not as reliant on clean fuel source with additives. You know, gasoline engines, the gasoline is oftentimes filled with additives to help clean the insides of the valve sealing surfaces and the cylinder heads. Diesel engines do and are subjected to carbon clogging. So it's not to say, I guess, that it wouldn't help if they had some additives in there. But generally speaking, diesel is not full of the additives like gasoline.
Is there generally, I mean, I know you said you're not a diesel mechanic, but is there less that can go wrong in a diesel engine in the sense that it just, once it gets going, it's kind of hard to stop?
Yes and no. It's always a strange question to try and answer, especially because I'm not a diesel technician, but diesels do, you know, they don't have spark plugs, and a lot of people might not be aware of that, so they rely on very, very high combustion chamber pressures, which is what we call compression. And so that very high pressure causes the air-fuel mixture, which in this case the fuel is diesel, not gasoline. And so the really high compression causes that air-fuel mixture to spontaneously combust. So it's not reliant upon a spark being introduced into that sealed chamber. And so in that sense, a diesel is a lot more reliable because you virtually eliminate the ignition system. So, you know, in a car, you have the spark plug, which is part of the ignition system, but you also have, in older cars, you have spark plug wires, and then you have a coil and a distributor, and then in new cars, they've eliminated the distributor and the spark plug wires, so you have a coil and a spark plug boot right on top of each spark plug. Virtually all of that is eliminated, and the sensors that are necessary for the correct timing of the spark, which would be referred to as ignition timing, that is also eliminated. So in that regard, the diesel engine is much simpler. But then, in an effort to control emissions in our country, diesel engines there's been a lot of additional things implemented to try and clean up the exhaust. And so you have particulate filters, and we have lots of contraptions under the hood as well, lots of which, again, I'm not an expert in, but it has complicated things for people that own diesels. I know that it's very popular to eliminate. People might see diesels for sale if they're looking for a big diesel truck, and it says, you know, it's been eliminated, or I think that's the term they use, where basically they've ripped all of that stuff off, and it renders the truck not, you know, it's not at all environmentally friendly anymore. Mm-hmm. Because most new diesels are in order to be sold in this country, they have to have some sort of technology on there to eliminate particulates, because diesels obviously are not very clean burning without some sophisticated exhaust. So I don't know if I answered the question actually, but yeah, they're very reliable, and they're more like a tractor still than a car. And we see all these big trucks on the road, and I know a lot of us are wondering, why do people need these huge trucks? And they're just getting bigger and bigger and stronger, actually. I mean, the amount of weight these trucks can pull is just incredible. And I think, you know, for contractors, for instance, I mean, if you want to go rent an excavator, they're not even going to rent you one and let you hook it up to your truck unless you have a certain size truck, because they don't want to be responsible for their equipment ruining the transmission in your truck. So there's really nothing else that can pull some of these things other than these diesel trucks, but they certainly are, there's a hot market to eliminate the emission systems on these things, which is, you know, it's a real mess.
Yeah, I've been reading about the emissions.
Probably seen them.
Yeah, the emission systems. I'm more familiar with them for diesel locomotives because of my railroad hobby. But the urea treatment systems and stuff like that required on Tier 4 locomotives are quite elaborate.
Yeah. So I hope that answers her question. She was in Arcata, I guess. And
yeah, Mary.
Yeah, you know, the other thing I guess I would say about that is they have ag diesel, which is, I think, most states dye that diesel pink, and from what I understand, it's not really any different than regular diesel. It's just you just don't have to pay the taxes, fuel taxes and whatnot on agricultural diesel, which is why it's technically illegal to put agricultural diesel in your, you know, licensed passenger car or big truck. But as far as I understand, that's still just the same blend of diesel.
Interesting. Our guest is Zach Edwards from Ashland Automotive in this month's edition of The Squeaky Wheel. We're going through lists of car care concerns and questions, and you can add to the list. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. You've already blown my mind today, Zach. I mean, granted, you can tell the newest vehicle I own is an 06, and so I wasn't even aware of the fact that we don't have spark plug wires anymore.
Yeah, well, you've got a newer vehicle than me.
Never thought that would happen.
Joking. I actually have a 2010. I feel like I'm really coming up in the world. So, but I've only had that one for just a couple of years. Yeah, spark plug wires are a thing of the past. I mean, what they're all doing now is putting individual coils on top of each spark plug. So if you have a V8, you'll have 8 coils. And there's a little, maybe a 4 to 7 inch rubber boot that contains the spark as the spark goes from the coil to the tip of the spark plug. And so the rubber boot and the coil itself are called coil packs. And a coil pack, they're incredibly expensive, which is the downside, but the upside is they're very reliable, and spark plug wires historically have not always been reliable. And in theory, they should be, but if they get too close to something hot, like an exhaust manifold, they can become damaged by basically melting. And the other thing that I think is not talked about very often, as far as unreliability of spark plug wires, is they were oftentimes subjected to interference. So when the spark was traveling through the wire, if the wire was routed next to something, and I mean, it could have been, for instance, I think Jeep had a fuel injector problem on an inline 6-cylinder where the actual spark plug wire was interfering with the fuel injector.
Oh, wow.
Basically, the voltage of that spark plug wire, which is, that the wires are holding in the spark, and the voltage to push that spark through that wire oftentimes was, like 80 to 100,000 volts. And that voltage could interfere with other things that were also operating electrically in proximity to that wire. And so there was like electrical interference happening could cause weird, goofy, and very intermittent problems. So all of that has been eliminated by containing the spark in that coil pack system just right on top of the spark plug and the combustion chamber, and usually that coil pack is recessed inside the cylinder head in a steel tube, and so there's really no interference. The interference problems, I guess, that technicians experience have almost been eliminated. So it's been a really nice feature, and the downside, of course, is when a customer starts having a misfire due to an ignition system, due to a coil pack in an ignition system, it's oftentimes the beginning of the end for all of those coil packs. And so as a service center, we are constantly trying to balance our recommendations with realistic budgetary concerns. And we try and tell a customer, you know, you've got a bad coil pack. The good news is we can fix it, but the bad news is you have 7 other coil packs that are the exact same age and have fired the exact number of times as this one that is starting to fail.
Right.
So there's a really good chance the other 7, if you have a V8, or, you know, if you have a 4-cylinder, you just have 4, all the rest of them are probably close behind. And at each time one of those fails, it's going to throw an error code. And it might be a very specific error code, and it might not. It's going to take a little bit of testing from the technician to verify that that's actually the problem, and then you would replace the part again. And so the customer is always faced with the choice of, do I replace all of them at once now, or do I wait and replace them one at a time, which is more expensive? And it's just it's a tough call, but this is a great example of how newer cars are. They're so much more reliable, and at the same time, more expensive.
Yeah, how much does the coil pack and plug all come as a unit?
The plug comes separately, and sometimes the coil pack, the rubber boot, which is essentially it serves the same function as a spark plug wire of, you know, the past. Sometimes that coil pack boot is sold separately, but not always, and it's up to the vehicle manufacturer whether they want to allow that coil pack to kind of come apart and have that boot replaced separately. There's literally no other part of the coil pack that you would replace separately. It would just be the boot and then the actual coil, the wrap of wire that's sealed in a highly insulated plastic device.
So, do you get things like spark plug failure without coil pack failure?
You do, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a spark plug can just fail. It could have been manufactured incorrectly, you know, so defective, basically out of the box. It could have been installed incorrectly. It could have been dropped. If at the factory or somewhere along the supply chain, a spark plug could have been dropped, and they still have... A spark plug, even though they're highly sophisticated now, they still look the same. They have the ceramic insulator, and if that ceramic insulator is compromised at all, then you're going to have a spark plug that is not going to operate correctly. And interestingly enough, the spark plug, if it's not firing as it's designed to fire, you have a slight crack in the ceramic, and so you have a spark plug that's leaking spark, that can cause a coil pack to fail prematurely. And so one thing can cause another. A coil pack causing a spark plug to fail is much less likely than actually a spark plug causing a coil pack to fail.
Okay. Zach Edwards, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange with this month's edition of The Squeaky Wheel. What's your vehicle question, your vehicle story? Join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Leftover question from last time from Terry in Eureka asking about older Toyota Tacoma 2006 with 300,000 miles. Son told her since it's older, she now needs to use higher octane fuel, even though her car calls for regular. Is this true?
Yeah, so I love these questions. No, the short answer is no, it's not true. Now, if the Tacoma is pinging, if she's having a problem with the vehicle having pre-ignition or pinging, and that's the noise that sounds like marbles rattling around in an old coffee can.
Yes.
And diesels kind of sound like they're pinging, too, if you can kind of, I'm just trying to describe for the listeners. So your vehicle is designed to be able to accommodate for pre-ignition or for pinging, detonation. Those are all similar terms, not quite, but very similar. And if the vehicle is not able to accommodate for that, then there's a problem. Now, putting in a higher-octane fuel might temporarily solve that problem, but it's covering up or putting a Band-Aid on a larger problem. And so if this driver is hearing the pinging, they really should take it to a shop and tell their mechanic, hey, the vehicle's pinging. Generally, it's going to be pinging like when you're pulling a load, or, you know, going up the long Siskiyou grade. If she was driving from Yreka to Mount Ashland, and that long grade coming driving north can cause a vehicle to start to ping under heavy load. That's an ignition timing issue and could be fixed without having to change the fuel source. I mean, if the vehicle calls for regular fuel, that's all it really should ever need. Some of the things that cause that pre-ignition are carbon buildup from fuel residue. Unburnt fuel turns into carbon residue and sticks inside the combustion chamber, and over time it can build up and increase the compression because it's reducing the space. The volume of the combustion chamber becomes lessened as carbon builds up in there.
So less space equals more compression,
Yep, and then that can cause spontaneous combustion, like in a diesel engine, and that combustion happens before the spark plug, and then there becomes really two combustions, and the flame fronts collide with each other, and that's what makes that the pinging noise. And so there's a couple of remedies for this, but either way, it's just, if your car is pinging, it's an indication something is not right. And again, just to summarize, you could put premium fuel in, and that might cover it up, but there's an underlying issue that really should be addressed. And premium fuel is quite a bit more expensive, so I guess you could pick your poison. But I would choose to get either put a top end cleaner in there. Sometimes a top end cleaner is all it's going to take, but generally the ones on the shelf aren't going to do it if it's that old and experienced that many miles. You're going to need to maybe get it professionally cleaned. They have devices that can blast out combustion chambers and intake manifolds and whatnot.
All right, so yeah, either the more expensive gas or the even more expensive treatment, but that'll stop the pinging, and you want to buy the expensive gas. Let's take a call here. We got 3 minutes left. Here's Amy in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on the Squeaky Wheel.
Thank you.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, Zach. I have a question.
Hi, Amy.
Hi. You might recognize my voice. I have a 2010 Dodge Ram 2500. It's a diesel. And when I turn the engine off, it makes a squeal sound. Like the engine wants to keep going, but I've turned the ignition off. I've taken it in and gotten it torqued and tightened, but I don't know what's causing it. And I need to, I want to make sure my belt's not going to blow up in my truck.
Okay, thanks for the question, Amy. Appreciate that.
Yeah, you've got. Did she say she? We have maybe a strange connection right now, but she said she's gotten it torqued and tightened.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, her belt probably. Yeah, that's a weird one. Sometimes belts can get glazed, where if they're a little bit out of alignment, that rubber belt can get chafed on one side, and the chafing heats up the rubber, and then it gets glazed over to where it doesn't really have the grippy surface on the rubber anymore. It's just kind of got a shiny surface.
It's been rubbed smooth.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that can cause the the belt to slip a little bit, and the slipping is what makes the squeaky noise, the belt chirping or the belt squeaking noise. So she said she had it changed or just tightened and torqued.
Just tightened and torqued. Might, yeah. Just...
Yeah, it might need to be changed. Or it might be that the diesel, the kill engine technology is not shutting it down fast enough, and so it's trying to kind of stay running, and it's shoving that belt around a couple of pulleys that aren't actually moving, and so that's where she's getting the chirping or the squeaking sound. And my advice would be to just take it back in and tell them it's still acting up, and find out, what's your, for one, the shop has to be able to duplicate a customer's concern. They have to hear mm-hmm. what the customer is hearing. And if they can't do that, in the case of a very intermittent problem, that makes it really, really hard. If they can hear the problem that Amy's having, that's a huge plus, because then they can kind of run some tests or do some experiments and figure out, why this is happening. So I would just take it back in to the place you've been taking it and tell them, hey, I'm worried about this. It's still acting up. Are you guys able to hear the problem? If they are, then say, what tests can you run to figure out what's going on?
Yeah, I like that look on a technician's face when you can duplicate the problem and they go, ah, okay, now I know what we're dealing with here. That's
yeah,
a good moment.
And that's half the battle is just duplicating the customer's mm-hmm. problem, because, nobody knows their car better than the driver of the car every day. It's really hard for technicians sometimes to get in and hear
all right.
what customers are hearing.
All right. Zach Edwards, The Squeaky Wheel. Good to visit with you again. Talk to you in a month.
Okay. Thanks, Jeffrey.
Take it easy.